Faculty and staff included in that.
Both of them.
Yes. Now we're to the president's report, Dr. Ransdell.
I'll be brief. I sent to you in writing a few weeks ago a somewhat thorough analysis of about of the dozen or so searches either recently completed or currently underway, and you received that information. I won't go through that, but I will acknowledge a couple things in that regard. Had the opportunity this past Monday to bring our administrative council together, and we spent the day addressing a number of important policy and campus matters. We also had a time to spend some social time to get a little bit more acquainted with each other, because we're about half new in terms of our senior university officers. Gordon Emsling, Gordon Bayless were with us. Ross Bjork was with us. Bob Owen, still relatively new in his duties as Vice President for Information Technology. So our administrative council, five of the university officers, of the 10 university officers that are direct reports to me, are in the process of transitioning. And I could not be more pleased with that transition. I'm simply delighted with the talent and the capacity and the intellect and the experience that we're bringing into our senior executive positions. What a great compliment the new individuals that are coming into the positions I mentioned are to the individuals who are in their current positions. And so I want the administrative council, all of you, to stand up, if you would, please. Stand up. This group is becoming, have been, but they're becoming even more so, a very cohesive group of senior executive officers. And what we're doing across the board, from academic affairs, campus, you're seeing what we're doing in the area of facilities and public affairs, and you heard from Debbie earlier, and you'll get to know Ross a bit more in a moment. And so many things, don't ever get to this, but you hear from Ann all the time on financial stuff, but you don't hear about what we're doing in the name of diversity and what we're doing with IT across this campus to make this place state-of-the-art from a technological standpoint, and to improve the pleasantness and the quality with which our faculty and staff go about their work. So many things happen that never reach this table. Once we hire the final position that's in transition with development and alumni relations, this team will be together again for the next decade as we pursue what you all know to be our strategic agenda. And this is the group that will allow that seven-word vision, a leading American university with international reach, to happen and to be able to document it. So I'm delighted to have such a group of colleagues and peers, and we work with each other. Nobody in this group works for anybody else. We work with each other to achieve that vision. And this board needs to know who its executive officers are and how proud I am to have such a group of colleagues with whom to work. And some of them have been around quite some time. Howard and John go back. They're as old as I am in terms of their work on this campus. Maybe even a little bit older in terms of their work on this campus. And that blend of history and legacy and heritage and tradition with new, fresh experience and talent and insight is what will make this university hum. So I thank you all for your great work. I wanted to state that publicly and on the record, if you will, before our Board of Regents. So you guys are great, and we appreciate you, and keep up the great work. Thank you. Ross, once a year we try to take a moment to give you an update on our athletic department, and so this will be Ross's first opportunity to make such a presentation to this board. And, you know, fair or not, our society is so cued in on athletics and on sport and American higher education, public and private. Is so cued in on athletics, and when you see a Duke and a Stanford, private universities, where their main brand somehow seems to come back to their athletic success, unfair or unfair, fortunate or unfortunate, the reality, there's a sports section in every paper, and we intend to be in that section for all the right reasons, for success academically and athletically, and it is an important part of this university and what we do, and we simply must do it right, stay in compliant with the NCAA, have academic integrity and success. And success on the court, in the pool, on the field, on the track, whatever the case might be. Ross brings great experience to lead that effort, and I'm pleased for him to make this annual report to this board on our athletic program and the value it brings to the university. So, Ross.
Thank you, President Ransdale, and thanks to the Board of Regents for being here and listening to me and approving my contract back in June, I think that was. So, great to be here today and the opportunity to speak to the governing body of the entire university speaks to what Dr. Ransdale just talked about in terms of the athletic exposure. And so it's funny, and you know when there's a good match. He talked about society. I had in my notes here, society tells us, right or wrong, that athletics is oftentimes the front porch, the window, the viewpoint that the outside world views the institution. Again, right or wrong, it happens. And so with that, from my perspective and our perspective, comes an obligation that we must uphold and protect the entire university, uphold and protect the brand, if you will, of WEKU. And so that's our charge each and every day. And so that's my mantra in terms of tying into the university. Before I get into the annual report, just want to talk about a little bit about my transition. As I approach the end of my first 100 days, I'm not necessarily counting, but we are counting. It's actually next Tuesday, if you are keeping track. You know, what I've learned is that this place is amazing. And I knew that going into it. I spent some time here back in 1996 and 97. I knew all those factors. I knew the passion, the spirit. But once you sit in this chair and once you see it in action, it truly is amazing. So I think all of us can be proud of the athletic department, but also the entire campus and how we're perceived on the outside world. I think it's truly amazing. So I've learned that throughout these first 95 or so days. I've had a stump speech that I've given across the region, across the state, and some of that I'll weave into the annual report. But I think people have really bought into the accessibility, and I think that's one thing that I've tried to do is be as visible and accessible as possible during these first 100 days. I had a chance to spend a week with Wood Selig, and I think we need to continue to talk about him and what he provided to the athletic department here in the athletic program and the entire campus over his tenure. So we're always going to talk about what Wood Selig did, and that was a great week. It was a great process that Gary envisioned. It worked out timing-wise on both of our ends for us to spend a week together. So that was a truly learning experience, I think, for not only for myself to learn what's going on here, but also I know he carried a lot of that with him to Old Dominion. Obviously, I want to thank Dr. Ransdale for having the confidence in me to lead the athletic program. It's a special, special opportunity. It's an obligation. These jobs are not easy to get, and so I'm thrilled and excited and really humbled to have this opportunity. And there's a slide in the annual report about me. Don't let the fact that I'm the youngest athletic director at the 1A level scare you. Please don't leave the room as we go through this. But no, what that says is that I've been trained appropriately and been preparing for this opportunity for a long time, and I think I have what it takes. So what we want to do is we want to walk through our annual report, and really the thing I want to stress is that we're really best in class in many ways. Best in class in the Sun Belt, best in class in our region, in both academically and athletically. And so I think that's important as we walk through this. Obviously, we're going to talk. Thanks for approving Eric Jenkins' contract. And you can see by the trophies that have been stacked up behind him and Coach Long there, Eric embodies what we believe in excellence across the board, both athletically and academically. So Eric is on our front cover. Here's an opening letter. This is going to go out to our donor base, our Hilltopper Athletic Foundation donor base. And I just want to highlight the accomplishments are a result of really the combined efforts of those six facets. And we don't have to go through every one of them. But obviously, we could not do what we do in athletics without a great president and without a great governing board. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen with buildings. It doesn't happen with budgets. It doesn't happen with funding. So we cannot do what we do without this board, without great leadership from Dr. Ransdale. We have coaches and student athletes that are devoted. That's one thing I've learned very quickly is that our staff is unbelievably dedicated and hardworking towards the effort of making this program one of the best in the country. Student athletes, we attract, as Craig said, we attract from across the region. We recruit strategically, and so we're going to continue to do that. Obviously, faculty and staff who understand how athletics fits within the university mission. I think that's also important that we engage the faculty and staff, and we'll talk about some of those things. So that's our opening letter. That you don't pay attention to the picture there in the middle, but one thing I will tell about this page is that championship effort was really the tagline that was established three or four years ago, maybe even a little bit longer. And we're going to continue that. I think that makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways that we're giving championship effort, both, again, academically and athletically. That picture there in the middle does recognize something that I believe in, and that's honoring our past and our legacy and our history. I think we can do a lot of great things in honoring our past and our legacy. And Lily Mason is one of the best women's basketball, Lady Topper basketball players ever in our history. And she was inducted into the Kentucky State Sports Hall of Fame. And so I had a chance to go up there with Pam and several others. So we're going to continue to honor and recognize our legacy and our history. We're going to talk about championships in the Sun Belt Conference. You know, we're measured athletically by the number of championships that we win and compete against, and also the Bubas Cup. If you look at the total there in the right-hand section there, 26 conference team championships over the last 3 years in the Sun Belt. That leads the entire country. I just came from UCLA. UCLA wins a lot of national championships. This tops UCLA in their performance in the Pac-10 conference. This tops everyone in the country. So we're proud of what we do athletically. The Bubas Cup and the number of championships over the last 10 years. The last 2 years, Middle Tennessee State has won the Bubas Cup. However, we've led the league in the number of championships won. This year we won 7. Middle Tennessee won the Bubas Cup, but they only won 1 championship. What that tells you is they have balance really in the top 3 in each sport program. So what we have to do is we have to kind of shorten that gap. Football, obviously, as that gets going, we expect to be better in the Sun Belt Conference. We've just made a change with our golf structure. We've taken our two head coaches in both men's and women's golf and made them full-time positions. We believe that'll help us compete in the Bubas Cup. We're always right there in the end, and then tennis and golf, those four sports really kind of lag us behind as we finish in the Bubas Cup standings. So we believe golf can have an immediate impact with our facilities, with this community, and so we're addressing that as we go forward. So, but Middle Tennessee wins the Bubas Cup, but we have 7 championships and they have 1. So it's something to keep in perspective. Academically, we pride ourselves on our academic prowess, and there's a lot of statistics here to go through, and obviously you can read that later. But our APR, our academic performance rate that is measured by the NCAA, we are publicly recognized if we do good, and we are publicly recognized if we don't do well academically. And so we are hitting the standard. The standard is 925 is the minimum standard they want you to hit. We well exceed that in a majority of our sports and are above that in all of our sports. And so we're proud of the fact that our APR continues to be successful. This past spring, we have 19 sports in athletics. We really have 15 programs because you count track and field 6 different times between cross country, indoor, and outdoor track. 9 out of the 15 programs had a GPA of 3.0 or higher. 9 out of the 15. Our women's track had a 2.99 GPA. And Patty, we didn't think the faculty would allow us to round up to 3.0 on GPA.
Can't round.
So we only kept it at 9. We kept it at 9 out of 15, but we had 10 programs hovering around the 3.0 GPA. So again, that's something to be proud of. Patrick Jenkins is pictured here. He won a postgraduate scholarship award from the NCAA, a very prestigious award, $7,500. He's going to be a medical student at the University of Kentucky. And so we're very proud of our academic prowess.
I have a quick question before you go on. How are you funding the full-time positions in the golf program?
Basically, looking at our budget, reallocating
internally.
Current resources that we have. We anticipate we're growing our ticket sales, we're growing our donations, we're growing our revenue gain guarantees, and also the combined efforts of the campus funding as well. So we're reallocating internally.
Okay, great.
The academic center that we have, if you haven't seen it, it's right here, right across the lawn here. The Wedge Student-Athlete Success Center is one of the best in the country. We have full resources to accommodate our student-athletes, and so I think that's important that we continue to promote that. I've been invited to speak to the Faculty Senate on September 16th, and so I'm going to do that. And I think that message is, you know what, we want to have a relationship. We want to be engaged. We want to be transparent. We want to be accessible. We can't be on an island across the street over there. We have to be engaged with the campus. So we're going to always talk about our academics. Some of the things that we're doing facility-wise, the heavy lifting has been done. If you look at the Houchins L.T. Smith Stadium, you look at Diddle Arena, our heavy lifting has been done in athletics. So the hard work from that perspective, it has been completed, but there's always little things that we need to be doing to improve our facilities as we go ahead. So we're right now looking at the process of really engaging kind of a master plan for our baseball stadium, the tennis courts that are wedged in there. That's valuable space. Is there room for other tennis courts across campus? So we're looking at that. We're looking at our track facility. Beautiful track facility from a surface standpoint, but no infrastructure, no restrooms, no stands, nowhere for our student athletes to hide if it starts raining or lightning. They have to go into those storage sheds over there. So we're looking at some things that are small in nature, but important to the overall program. We're also doing some branding in Diddle Arena up on the second floor, kind of a hall of history to, again, talk about our history. We're doing some branding in our practice gyms, and we'll do some other things in the lobby here as you enter the Topper Club and the football complex. So we're doing some little things as we go forward. But we have great facilities. The investment that's been made by the governing body here, by the president, by the entire campus, by John's group and Brian's group and our facility staff is just amazing that we have this platform to recruit to. Moving ahead, we'll skip this picture and that page. But also, let's talk about Willie. It's really kind of a new era in terms of leadership in athletics, but also our football program. And those of you that have spent any time with Coach Taggart, you know his passion. You know his energy level. You can see his quote there about WKU is in his DNA. He believes that. He walks it. He talks it. And the energy level, that I've been so impressed with the staff and the approach that they're taking towards building our football program at the 1A level. It's not easy. The investment has been made, though, and I think we have the ingredients to make this thing happen at the 1A level. Our non-conference schedule is fairly easy, at Nebraska, at Kentucky, Indiana at home, and at South Florida. Then we get into our Sun Belt Conference. But I think if we show improvement, we're competitive, we're disciplined, we give people a chance that, you know what, this is being built the right way. Again, the ingredients will come together, and I think you're going to see results happen for this program on the football side. And that's going to elevate the entire community, the entire region, and obviously the campus. If we have 23,000 people on this campus, 5 and 6 Saturdays a year, that elevates the stature of the entire university and the entire community at large. So I think that's something to look forward to. Here's some other shining examples of All-Americans that we've had. Claire Donahue, our swimming student-athlete, competed at the NCAA meet, and she has a chance next year to finish really in the top five in the country. She is really becoming an elite swimmer, something that we really haven't had in that caliber in our history. So look for big things out of Claire in 2010-11. Here's some other examples of Sun Belt Conference Coaches of the Year, Players of the Year here in the Sun Belt Conference. Impact in the community. Again, our obligation is to protect the university, and so our brand is important and how we engage the community, how we're really viewed by the community. We do a lot of community service projects. We did a tour stop that's not highlighted in this section. We visited 6 different communities around the region. Actually, Melissa came to the one in Glasgow, so we appreciate you being there. But the message there is we have to spread our wings. We can't just focus on Bowling Green. We are a regional, and we're a state, and we're a national institution. And so we want to really follow the same mission as a university. And as we go through the mission statement in the end, you'll see that, that theme in talking about the entire Commonwealth. So we're proud of our community service. Basketball has a big impact, obviously, our historical flagship program, so we wanted to highlight that. Athletic impact, our budget is about $19 million in athletics. The university's budget in 2010-11 is $380 million. So we're, in our minds, we're a small 5% of that entire budget, but the impact that we provide on the institution in terms of exposure is far beyond that. And again, the obligation there is to make sure we do things the right way. We also are getting ready to announce an extension of our Russell athletic contract, which is our apparel provider. They're based here in Bowling Green. Fruit of a Loom is growing daily. They have over 1,500 jobs here locally, and Russell is headquartered right here in Bowling Green. So we're proud of our relationship and our new contract. Donations have gone up. John Paul's going to talk about donations across campus. Athletics, we've gone up in donations in athletics, and we're getting ready to invest in more staff in our development program in athletics, because I believe the ROI, the return on investment, is there. The more people we have out asking for money, the more we can generate. So we're looking at some ways to do that. The national exposure, I've been with our golf program change, I've been in phone tag with Kenny Perry the last several days to really engage him back into the university. He's been somewhat engaged, but I think there's a lot of room for growth there. And so by taking our golf programs to the next level, you know, Kenny is now excited. He left me a great voicemail this week talking about his excitement. And so, again, nationally, we can be exposed by having all these resources out there available to us. The Indiana game, the Indiana football game, our home opener, is a 4 o'clock kickoff. It's going to be broadcast on the Big Ten Network. The Sun Belt has an agreement with ESPN. They allowed us to put this game on the Big Ten Network, and it'll be shown in 35 million homes with the potential for 75 million total homes if those people decide to pick up our game. Again, national exposure right here from our WKU campus. So we're excited about that. Just some other statistics that we'll throw out. The Kentucky WKU baseball game at Bowling Green Ballpark in April drew 6,183 fans, the largest college baseball game attendance in the state, in the history of the state. We're going to play two games there next year against Louisville and Kentucky. So, again, having these resources is something that we're proud of, and that was a great example of really a community outreach effort, and so that'll be something to grow on in the future. I think they have more room to expand. They told us they can add a few more 100 people, so we'll see if we can break that record next year. Here's some other statistics that that you can read there in the in your booklet. If you look at the picture of the soccer, Wood Selig, I talked about him, he's never going to leave us, right? He's in that picture in the stands on his cell phone. If you can see that. Can you see that there with Wood Selig back there? He must be trying to close a gift there. Just highlights of our mission statement. We had a mission statement in athletics, and I sat down with our administrative team in athletics in the last couple weeks, and we've kind of tweaked a few things. So this is kind of more of a draft to be finalized, but I think the important things to highlight as we go through here is that we have to support the university vision. We have no other choice but to do that, and we're going to constantly beat that drum that we are part of the institution. Also, we really want to serve the Commonwealth of Kentucky, not just Western Kentucky University. We believe, and it fits the institutional vision, that we serve the entire Commonwealth. We want to be a player on the national scene. It means we have to be competitive in the Sun Belt, we have to win championships, and we have to qualify for NCAA postseason. We also have to promote integrity, we have to promote our history, we have to be equitable, we have to be fair, and so our mission statement is going to fit all those qualities. Our core values, and this is really how we're going to filter decisions. First, this is the first filter, and it's not necessarily listed first, is student-athletes. We're here because of students and student-athletes. So all of our decisions are going to be filtered through that main emphasis. Student-athletes have to come first. And then following that is we have to be academically excellent. We have to uphold the academic integrity of the institution. We have to be with the campus when it comes to academics. We can't, if kids don't go to class, they can't play. If they don't pass, they can't play. We have to be academically sound. Student-athlete welfare is an utmost. Are we providing the right resources for student-athlete welfare? And again, that filter of student-athlete success and how we make decisions is important. Integrity. We can't compromise. NCAA rules won't allow us. Sun Belt rules. Institutional policy will not allow us. We have to be have strong integrity in every decision that we make. Fiscally, compliance-wise, all those things are going to fit integrity. Social responsibility. We're not always going to have our student-athletes conduct themselves appropriately. We know that. They're part of society, but we're going to teach them and we're going to coach them to be responsible citizens as much as possible. We can't watch them 24/7. We wish we could. The dreaded phone calls that you get late at night when something might happen, those are the things that keep you up. But we're going to preach social responsibility as much as possible on as many platforms as we can. And that applies to our staff as well. So that's a core value. University integration. We've talked a lot about that in this short time here. We have to be part of the university. It's really an honor to be part of the President's Administrative Council. A lot of athletic directors across the country at the 1A level do not have a seat at the table. And so as Gary was talking to me about this position, that was important to me to have a seat at the table with all the other vice presidents that run the university. So that's important. Community engagement. We can't do it alone. We have to have resources privately. We have to have sponsorship dollars. We have to be able to sell tickets. We have to be engaged in the community, public relations-wise. So community engagement is important. And last but not necessarily least is we want to be competitive. We want to be right there at the top of the Sun Belt standings. We want to qualify for NCAA postseason. So we want to represent the university well when it comes to wins and losses. And so if we do all these things, I think you'll be proud of our athletic program. And as we go forward in my tenure, which I plan to be for a long time, and can't wait to go into the next 100 days and go into the fall season. So I think that was longer than 10 minutes, but hopefully that covered everything. Yes.
I just have one question that I'd just like to
address. Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if you've been here long enough to go through the process of explaining to the athletes what the agents on campus can cause and what they can do. I don't know if you've been through that teaching class yet.
We haven't.
But you need to put your ways to address that for them.
We have our student-athletes start reporting for our fall sports next week, volleyball, soccer, and football, and cross-country a little bit later. Every time the student-athletes come together and report, we have sessions that go over NCAA compliance. The NCAA has really cracked down on agent warfare, really, is what it is. I mean, they're coming after student-athletes, and working at UCLA and University of Miami, I saw it firsthand where they can infiltrate the student-athletes' network of people to influence what they might do. They might take an extra benefit. They might take a trip to Miami, which is how this thing kind of started. So we will educate our student-athletes on day one. The moment they report, we talk about all the NCAA rules, and we talk about specifically the agent world that's out there. It's very important that we continue that, and it's even heightened in the last 4 weeks with all the activity that's gone on around the country.
And, you know, I understand that you can't be with them all the time and know them all the time, but I guess the best that we can do is to make sure that they're informed.
Correct. Absolutely. You always want to make sure you have a program, an educational program in place, because the worst thing that can happen is, well, what'd you do to tell your student-athletes? We didn't do anything. Well, here's our plan and how we're rolling out all of our compliance procedures.
Ross, we've had a long, successful history in athletics at Western. I know you know that. And I can tell from listening to you today that under your tutelage and tenure, that's going to continue.
I appreciate
we're
that.
We're proud of what's gone on in the past, and it's going to go in the future.
That's the plan. Okay.
All right.
Good. Thank you, Ross.
Thank you.
Okay.
John Paul Blair will present the year-end capital campaign update and what progress we're making philanthropically.
You know, I was pleased to be asked to give our year-end report in Tom Heil's stead. We had a fun celebration. Many of you were there last night as Tom prepares to leave and move on to Bowling Green number two for him. But I'm more pleased that I'm the bearer of great news as we have finished a record year in many categories that I'm going to share, and most importantly, in our cash contributions. The pages that I'm going to cover are 48 through 52 in your booklet. And beginning with our endowment support, really, the bank account, the backbone of what it is that we're attempting to do. As you can see, over the past several years, our endowment has experienced tremendous growth due to the sound investment policies and the priority that the board, the president, the faculty has placed on our endowment, and also certainly the record gifts from our alumni and friends. We are not quite back to our high watermark where we were 2 years ago, but we've made tremendous gains this year, and we're currently, as you can see, over $102 million in our endowment. And this past year, I'm pleased to report that we performed better than any other institution in the Commonwealth. The next page is an update on our campaign. You can see that we're at $162 million. We continue to be ahead of the pace and the goal that we have shared publicly of $200 million in June 30 of 2012. We have experienced a little bit of leveling the last couple of years with the economy, and also, traditionally, university campaigns have a spike upward in the beginning as you go public, and there's a great momentum, some leveling in the center, and then what we are getting ready to enter is the final phases where we will have, that sense of urgency. Priorities will be presented and come more into focus, and we will have a positive surge, and we're very confident about the position that we are in at this point at $162 million. Page 50 is the record that I spoke of. Our cash receipts finished at the highest level we've ever experienced here at WKU, right at $19 million. That's a 39% increase this year. Colleges and universities over the last 20 years, we've averaged annually about a 6% increase. And with the state of affairs as they are this past year, there was a prediction, some modeling of a 4.3% increase, so slightly under our average traditionally. So for us to have a 39% growth this year, it's something that we're very pleased and just proud that our alumni and friends are so engaged in our priorities. Within that growth, 45% increase came from alumni giving from 3.8 to 5.5 million. And we also received record giving from WKU faculty and staff this year, some $790,000 from 872 members of our faculty and staff was provided to the university this year. Also, major giving, and a major gift is defined differently at different institutions. At WKU, it would be a one-time gift of $10,000 or more. And this past year, we had more major gifts at 189 of those than we had ever achieved, and that totaled another record. 12.5 million of the 19 was in the form of major gifts. The last page that I'm going to highlight is page 51, the President Circle membership. It did bounce back from last year. A lot of President Circle members are making sacrificial gifts to get to the $1,000 level, so it does fluctuate a little more with the economy. But we did have a good year, and we came back toward the high water mark that we experienced 2 years ago. So things are going in the right direction there as well. There's more detail provided on pages 52 through 55. I'm glad to answer any questions, but again, let me just close by saying that with the predictive models that were out there this year, we're just very pleased with the success we had, and this current year, the model or the percentage of growth that they've identified is more at the traditional level at 5.7, and obviously we've set our sights a little higher, but feel good about the overall position of the campaign and the state of affairs for fundraising for WKU.
Page 55 does specifically break down the capital campaign gifts and pledges and how that $162 million in hand with nearly 2 years to go in this campaign, how it is, how it stands right now in each of the various categories of giving.
John, I know that Tom did a great job while he was here, but I also know that nobody does it by themselves. And for you all to have accomplished what you've accomplished in the last couple of years with the state of the economy, not only nationally but globally, just goes without question what a great job that you all have done. Because most universities across the country lost way a lot more of their game than we did, and you all to be commended for what you've done the last couple of years on that.
Well, we've continued. Thank you. We've continued to stay close to them. It's been part of our strategy to not shy away, but to stay close. And you know, obviously, we've been aggressive, but they're the real heroes, our alumni and friends. So, thank you.
Aggressive, but prudent too.
More with the current economic conditions, more of our discussions are with gifts of appreciated assets, but it's more property than stock these days, and we're having more estate discussions, thinking long term rather than focusing on annual income or assets that may have lost value in a recessionary environment. So, again, part art and part science, and information is everything in this business.
In my view, real estate is the worst short-term investment there is, but it is the best long-term investment.
Yeah. Well, and people can take advantage of an appreciated asset in a property at an appraised value that might be considerably greater than what it might actually bring for it to go on to the market in this environment. And they can be better off with a charitable gift of a piece of property than trying to sell it right now.
Absolutely.
Good job, John Paul. I'll end my report very briefly. You have four handouts at your place. Robin, if you'll stand up real quick. Two of them are coming out of public affairs. Robin, you may have an observation or two, but this is a fact brochure. Every couple of years, we like to update this. A lot of information in this, but we often find ourselves in need of the ability to give somebody something quickly that packages the university in a brief context. That's very important in political conversations, in employment prospects, in alumni relations, et cetera, et cetera. So this is our update of our fact brochure that they're just now getting in this week, I guess. And then the second piece is, Robin, touch on this real quick, our marketing piece. I want you to look through this now or at your leisure, but this is, you saw a presentation a meeting or two ago about our marketing campaign. Here are the fruits of that effort.
Just a catalog of all of the various aspects of the marketing campaign, the Spirit campaign and the Honor campaign that we've run, as we reported to you, or are running a couple of meetings ago. Two separate campaigns with the same theme, but one directed at the parents of Honors College students, the other directed at 15 to 18-year-old Temple University going population. And so what you see are all the advertisements. You see all the stories that have been featured. In the very back, you have a DVD that shows you that's all of the TV ads that are running as well. And we just thought it would be helpful if we put all of this in one place so that we could see the various students and others who've been featured in this campaign. So that's all this is.
But it's a synthesis of all that you see each of these, each one in and of itself, but it's great to have a publication that brings all that together and a DVD.
We have print, we have online advertising, we have radio broadcast, and we have TV. So all of that is in here.
If you want to view them all, you got the DVD right there, so go home and find you a Blu-ray and put that sucker on.
And some of these haven't actually run. I mean, they're all in the queue, but we still have new ones that haven't actually been seen yet. But anyway, just wanted to have this all in our catalog so we could questions.
This is at your place. You know, it's important to not only do things, but to be sure that key populations know and understand what it is you're doing. And we sent this piece out to all of the chief academic officers, presidents, and chief admissions officers across America who are the ones who do the survey for U.S. News and World Report every year. Now, that's not the end all, and I've got some big issues with the U.S. News and World Report annual survey. But it is what it is, and it does get a lot of visibility. And we achieved a Confucius Institute, and when we achieved a designation by the Department of Defense as a Chinese flagship campus, one of only nine in America, pretty big deals nationwide. And it's one of those things that the higher education community across the country, are you serious? How'd they do that? But if they don't know, they don't know. And so we put this piece together just to kind of send it out across that community and let people know what this university is doing to achieve that vision to become a leading American university with international reach. These are two examples that happen to relate to China, but are the manifestation of that vision. You can do it, but unless people know that you're doing it, it doesn't have full value to the building of the brand of the institution. And finally, from a business standpoint, John, you've got the meal plan brochure that our students are now picking their meal plans for the coming year. We give this to you this time each year. It's important for you to kind of know how our students are eating and what they're eating. So here you are. and what it costs for a meal plan. And if you open that up and look at that map, one of the things I often say when I talk with groups of prospective students and parents is we don't have dining halls on our campus. We've done away with dining halls a long time ago. We have campus restaurants. We are not only a hot campus, but we're high on the cool factor. And where you are, where you live, how you access the internet, and what you eat is huge in the minds of a prospective and a current student. And so our meal plan options, Dale, is a huge selling point in what students will find on this campus because you got to eat. And we take that very seriously, and we're always going to be state-of-the-art. We're always going to be leading and shaping the curve in American higher education in terms of the quality of life on our campus. So I thought you want to track the dining options for our students. That's all in my report.
Thank you, Dr. Bransdale. Coming down the track here, Student Affairs, Mr. Jim Johnson.
Howard has some informational report here.
Right. Turn this over very quickly to Kit Tolbert, and maybe I'm already in their way. And Diane Carver. So I'll stand up and then move. But I want to very quickly say that we have come up with, we the university, and I want to brag on Bob Owen's staff. Diane just continues to do fantastic things for us. In the student affairs profession, we're constantly going to national conventions and keeping up with who considers himself the best. And probably I don't have to deal with what Ross does in terms of divisions. We measure ourselves against the best in every area of student affairs, no matter what institution it is, whether it's UCLA or Harvard. We think they've got something to learn from us. And when we're in exhibit halls at national conventions, everyone's got things for sale. Everyone wants you to buy their software package. They want you to let them come to your campus with something. What our staff does is we pick up their ideas, and we come back and say to Diane, look what we just found. And instead of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for packages and for different types of pieces of material, WKU staff makes their own. And what Kit Tolbert, who is Director of Housing Operations, and Diane Carver are going to show you one of our programs that we're quite proud of in terms of roommate selection. If they'd had a program of this nature when Gary and I were being considered as roommates, I probably wouldn't have been chosen. But I'm going to get out of their way and let them show you some of the real neat things that we're doing at WKU.
Okay. Well, I'm Kit Tolbert with Housing Office, and this is Diane Carver with the Information Technology. We created a program. It's called My Housing, and we wanted a little catchy thing for the students. It's kind of bright and kind of fun. Anybody's ever seen the movie Catch Me If You Can, this is a play off of that, graphic-wise. We think living on campus is the best thing, and we think it's just plain smart. So we kind of, this is our theme for this year. We kind of change it every year, but we really like this one, so we may see it again. What we're going to talk about is our room selection process. Every February, our returning students have an opportunity to re-up for the following year. And we've done that online for years, where they can submit their application online. But we took it the next step. I went to a conference in February a year ago and listened to a presentation at the University of Alabama, and they were doing something like this. So immediately, as Howard says, I come back and grab Diane and say, I want you to look at this. And so we looked at it, and she goes, well, I think we can do that. And I'm like, well, great, that's what I want to hear. So Diane and two of our other staff members and I went down to Alabama, and we spent the day with them. She talked with the IT people. We talked with the housing folks and kind of got an idea. And the program they did took years to implement. I don't know the exact, but they're talking a couple years, 2.5 years to develop it and get it out. We met with them in October, and we rolled this out at the end of January. So that's just an amazing accomplishment with Diane. But what we want to do is just talk a little bit about this, if I can get it going. And why did we want to do something new? Well, we wanted to kind of take our processes to the next level, both functionally and technologically. Students are used to doing everything online, so we figured they could apply online, but we wanted them to actually be in control of their choices instead of blaming us if they didn't get exactly what they wanted. So point number two, we wanted the students to be in control. We got great feedback, and we think we accomplished that. We also wanted our staff to be more customer service oriented. They became the question answers, the explainers, as opposed to just making the assignments and doing a lot of computer entry and tasky type things. And then we also wanted to be more efficient. How do we communicate? That was my biggest concern. We had such a good idea that the downfall would be if they didn't understand how to do it. So we pulled out everything we possibly could. We created a Twitter account. We already had Facebook. We did Herald articles. We sent out emails. Actually, we sent out 7 emails, which was my concern, too. They get inundated, and then they won't read them. But apparently they did, because it went real well. We had a website, just a live-on website, that had a step-by-step process and a time frame and all that for them. We put up posters and flyers. That first slide was our main poster that we put all over campus. And then we had floor meetings where our RAs on every floor meet with their staff, explain the process, answer questions, and that sort of thing. Okay, so the next thing we want to do, and I know lunch is waiting in the hallway, so we want to just do a real quick demo of what the students saw. Our students use TopNet to do everything. So we brought this in as a part of TopNet. You know, students pick concert tickets, game tickets, everything else online, so why not pick your room? Okay. Diane, if you want to
Okay. Well, this is the TopNet main menu. As you can see, students are used to going to student records, registration. We now have what's called My Housing, and they're used to going to this menu all the time. It's in the main menu. All right, what the student will first see is a schedule of events. This is the days and times they can pick to do the choices they want to do. Obviously, we have different name squatters. People want to stay in their same room. And then people who want to go to different rooms, they want to do roommates. And depending on their classification, was the dates they're allowed to do what they need to do. Also, let's say this student, this is the spring, and we're talking about the coming fall. So the spring shows where they're currently living and what their roommate is at that time in the spring. They can now decide to stay in the same room, choose a different room, or change their proxy code. The proxy code is a code to use when they want to pick their roommate. Each person has an individual proxy code they are allowed. All right, if a student had picked stay in the same room, they would have clicked that button. They're basically done. They would have got an email the next day saying, you are now in your next room, in the same room of last year. If they had picked, I want a different room, then they would go onto this form, and it would specify the halls. And it would only show them the halls they were available to pick from. If there were rooms available, the gender, whatever, so they would decide which hall they want, as well as the number of spaces, because it could be either one for myself or two if I had a roommate idea. I wanted to have two spaces available. So after they pick the hall, they will then see the number of rooms that are available, and if there's one or two spaces. If they had picked two spaces that they was interested in, they'd only see those particular rooms. All right, it would go back to this form, and now you see for the fall, it shows as Pierce Ford 117, and they do not have a roommate at this time. And now they want to pick a roommate. What they need to do, though, the person has to trust the next person and give you their proxy code. So I want Jane to be my roommate. She would have gave me her proxy code. I would then enter it in right here. Why did she give me the wrong proxy code? Well, now I can tell who the student is, name, the gender, and their birthday. So hopefully you're not pulling somebody incorrectly. The email will then be sent to the person you pulled in, so it won't be such a surprise when the follower comes rolling around, who's my roommate. They will know at that time. If they decide I did not want that roommate, they can change their proxy code and pick a different room. So that's just not set in stone then. That is done as a convenience for that person and their roommate. You can see now for this person, I can now see that I am in Pierce Ford 117, and that is my roommate that I have picked at this point. And at some point in time, I had a fight with her. I want to go to another room. I can change my proxy code. I can change my room. And then it's up to that person to do what they want to do. This has just been a tremendous help. It's put their decisions in the hands of the student. Also, this has helped the offices of kids, like you said. They spent tremendous amount of time trying to match people, and then they got complaints. Whereas this way, it was just, you know, it's basically in their hands to do what they want to do. So it's worked out really well.
And probably one of the biggest things was the students really felt like they were in control. In the past, we got a lot of feedback saying, how come you didn't give me what I asked for? I listed six options and you gave me my seventh. You know, why did I not get it? And now they were able to see, you saw our tiered approach. Squatters go first. If you like where you are, you can have that back. And then we went rising seniors, juniors, sophomores. And so it was a priority approach. And so if I was a sophomore and I wanted in, say, Northeast Hall, I would go pull up Northeast, and I could see there's nothing available. So it wasn't on someone else. It wasn't someone else's fault I didn't get it. They could see. So then they go in and check another hall, and they check until they see the hall that they are satisfied with living in. So we just were so surprised. We were just waiting for the ball to drop, and it never did. And so the only problem we had, I was at my conference again this February, and it was right in the middle of this process.
Yeah, she would leave during the process.
Okay, that wasn't the best of timing, but that's where you get good ideas. So I went to the conference again. Anyway, I'm at the conference. I'm at William & Mary, and still a colonial area. It doesn't have good cell reception. And so I was really having a hard time. I kept getting all these messages, and I couldn't get back to the people. I'd be standing outside looking for a signal. And I finally found out that they were calling me and telling me from the office that three and four people were assigned to the same room. Well, the only glitch we had, which is a glitch I've lived with every day, was, you know, if you ever go get a ticket to a St. Louis ball game or wherever, it says you have 22 minutes or something to reserve the spot.
I know,
gives
right.
you time to go get your credit card, whatever. Well, we didn't build in that little buffer.
Yeah.
So apparently there were three students in some cases, four in some cases, that would click on Northeast 234 within nanoseconds of each other. I had Diane print out the names and the exact moment they clicked hit, and they were within a tenth of a second of each other. So we've changed that, and that won't happen next year. But if that's the only problem we have, it was great. But here's some of the feedback. This first one I'm the most proud of because, it, you know, when you get, we don't hear a lot of positive comments in the housing office. Most people complain, but great program. Probably doing such a great job, keeping us ahead of the curve. I like the system. It makes it a little more personal. It's nice. It allows you to make arrangements with your friends. As Diane talked about the proxy code, that was kind of a critical part. That proxy code is good for nothing on this campus except selecting your roommate. And if you gave it out to too many people, then they could be moving you all over campus. So it did put a lot of control on the students, and but also allowed them to do what they wanted. And then the new system is too competitive. That was our big complaint. So that's it. We'll take it. What's next? Just kind of fine-tune and sharpen the process. One thing we left out this year was our special living options, because we didn't want them to be physical to the whole student population. We didn't want a non-honor student being able to live in the honors hall, or an athlete, non-athlete, same difference. So we left those out and did those manually. So one of the next steps will be to find a way to include those and then expand the process to incoming freshmen. As I said, this was only for our returning students. We wanted to kind of take off a little nibble, see how it went, and then eventually that would be a phase down the road later in our marathon, as Craig said earlier.
Very cool.
That's excellent ideas. Cool. Excellent.
Thank you.
And again, I just want to say this is an example of just one of the examples of student affairs working with other departments. And Bob, you just walked into a gold mine. We already knew about it. We may bring you and show you some of the other things that Diane has created, she and staff, with the idea. We go out and find an idea and bring it home, and next thing you know, she's showing us how we can do it without paying hundreds of thousands of dollars and annual maintenance fees for software that we can do right here, and we benefit from it every day. And we've got another one in our judicial affairs someday. We'll roll that one past you. That'll take a little more time, but let you know how we can kind of track when Johnny does something in the library that we find out about it down in Red's life, or what, vice versa. She put a program together where we can track behavior on campus also. Thank you very much.
Like you said, glad we didn't have those 40 years ago.
Yes.
I have one question. Are you doing anything to try to prevent cliques and segregation and all that within the dorm, and when they're making their choices, you know, 10 or 12 getting together and say, okay, let's all live right here?
We really don't. And actually, in a manner, we want students to create. One of the things we found, that we used to have freshman halls, and at the end of their freshman year, they had to disperse and go live somewhere else on campus because we had to have those freshman halls for the new students. And the complaint we got was they form a community on the floor, and then they have to leave it. And there's usually not a place on campus where say, those 15 people could live again. So in a way, we kind of want that to happen at the risk of creating some segregation, that sort of thing. But so no, we do not. Students are allowed to pretty much select whatever's available. So,
but what you're describing is a genuine concern. In lots of different ways, yeah. And Howard staff does track that, and but yeah, that's something to be mindful of.
We monitor those kind of things, but 10, 12 years ago, one of our goals was to make sure that we had a resident life housing program that students wanted to return to, not just live a couple semesters and take your first opportunity to leave. And we've accomplished that. Kids' greatest headache now is I've got students wanting to return for the junior and senior year to live on campus. Where am I going to put them and my freshmen? That's the problem that every housing program in the country wants to have. You don't want a system where everyone's trying to mark the time to leave. You want them to stay. And we've turned that corner.
And the last sheet you see in your book is the occupancy report for this fall, and 4,958 beds. Well, it appears as though we're full, but we're managing that. Between upperclassmen and incoming students get the nod typically in terms of preferability, because we have an obligation to house them. But it's a kind of like that fundraising conversation, part art and part science, and not being mindful of the human element, but also making the numbers work, because we got a business plan that we have to achieve for the Student Life Foundation. So don't be too preoccupied with what appears to be, you know, we're full in housing right now. All that will balance and wash out, not without a lot of effort and experience on Kit, you and your staff's part to make it work.
That was not in your all's packets, but we can send that to you.
Okay, yeah, we'll okay. I'm sorry, I saw it in mine, so I assumed that was in everybody's. But anyway, we're full right now as we head into the fall semester, and there will be a few more show up, and we'll manage it.
Does doing this electronically reduce the time that it takes for roommate change and room change and things like that?
Well, one of the things we didn't mention is this process began. We used to have a week where people could do their housing. This lasted a month. So you could go in and do your initial assignment or select your initial roommate, but then you had a month that we left it open that, say somebody canceled, you didn't get into Northeast initially, but you can keep querying the system over and over, and if there's a cancellation and you find it, you can pop yourself in.
Right.
So a lot of the room changes that we would do in the office were now being done by the students.
That's
and once we closed the system, then the students would communicate with us through email any changes that they wanted to do.
Very cool.
Howard, thank you all. And Jim, thank you. One thing, I came here in 1962, 48 years ago. Football team lived in the Rock House. Basketball team lived in Diddle Dorm. Coach Dennis had some of them living in the Helm Hotel, the Mansard Hotel, and all over the place. So I marvel at where we are now versus 1962. And the Brock House was, if you think that place was rough now, you ought to have seen it in 62. Other business coming up, upcoming meeting of board dates. You see that. I'm not going to go over that. It's on your schedule here. But remember the trustee conference September 13th, the 12th and 13th in Northern Kentucky. Let me emphasize one.
Let me ask clarification. I see two different dates on the board schedule in the packet. It has October 21 for the fall date, and this says October 22.
The one in the front of the packet is the 2011 schedule. That
there you go.
I wanted to bring that, make sure we brought that to your attention. This is for next year.
That's the one.
This one is for next year.
Oh, this is for 2011.
Yeah, right.
The date on the other business is for the balance of 2010.
I'm right. Of 2010.
Exactly. I got you. Okay. Sorry.
Well, let me emphasize one thing here. I can't emphasize this enough. Please, as we adjourn, what was discussed in the executive session must not and cannot be spoke about outside executive session. Please exercise that. What goes on in executive session stays there. Do not discuss that anywhere else. It's very important and could cause some problems. So please adhere to that. Do I have a motion that we adjourn for lunch? Larry, second. All in favor? Great. Thank you all.